Welcome to the Hirschfeld Century Podcast. I'm Catherine Eastman, the Archives Manager for the Al Hirschfeld Foundation.
And I'm David Leopold, the Creative Director.
And today we are here to talk about Hirschfeld drawings in the 21st century.
Hirschfeld in the 21st century.
That was supposed to be an echo.
You're going to work on the sound effects for this. Send money, please. We need an effects budget.
So we often talk about the Hirschfeld century, which is, of course, primarily the 20th century.
Yes, all the 2 years.
Right, but there's plenty from the 21st century.
Much more than you would think, and some really great, great works. I often tell people about the show that we put together for the New York Historical Society, where the last wall of the show were works that he drew in the last 18 months of his life. And they were some of the best works in the entire show.
Absolutely. Some heavy hitters on that back wall.
Oh, yeah. We're going to talk about some of them today. So as we were looking through all the works that he did in the 21st century, this from January 1st, 2000 to December 31st. Oh, no, I'm sorry. To January 18th, 2003. There's a lot of works and we're going to talk about each one. We're not going to talk about each one.
No, because there's hundreds.
There really are. But we're going to talk about some of our favorites. And we're going to look at them through sort of their categories, their types, like theater drawings and film drawings and TV drawings, because there's so many of each that as we were starting to make our list of our favorite pieces, we realized it was we didn't want to make it a 7-hour podcast.
And for those historians at home, maybe David doesn't realize the 21st century actually began January 1st, 2001, but we're going to include 2000 anyway. Centuries turn in the 1 year.
Yes, of course.
So I learned that on a replay of Jeopardy. So just wanted to clarify, we are including 2000. This is 2000 to 2003.
There you go. I am 57, but I'm in my 58th year.
True. Yes. That's
so when my birthday comes, August 23rd, in case anybody cares. Yes, I will be 58 then. That'll just be the end of my 58th year and the start of my 59th.
Okay, so how should we start?
Well, I want to, what if you had to choose theater, film, TV, dance, music, what would you choose to talk about first?
I think I would choose film.
Ooh, okay.
So, David, what film piece did you choose from the 21st century?
Okay, there's a number of film pieces, and I'm just talking about contemporary films like The Royal Tenenbaums, Gangs of New York, which was actually his last film drawing.
Right.
But I'm going to talk about a piece he did in 2001 in the 21st century, but that was a drawing of the 2000 Academy Award nominees for Best Actor and Best Actress that appeared in the New York Times right before the Oscar ceremony that year in 2001. And the reason I thought about that piece is because at that time, we were working on the Hirschfeld's Hollywood book and exhibition. And as I was putting it all together, of course, I shared it with Hirschfeld, wanted him to know what I was doing and wanted to, you know, I would be asking him questions and getting all the information. And he told me he didn't want the book and the exhibition to be all about the past. So he asked, he called up the Times and said, I'd like to do a drawing for the Oscars. And so he did this wonderful drawing of the Academy Award nominees. This was Russell Crowe, Laura Linney.
Ed Harris.
Ed Harris is in there.
Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks is in there. It's real A-list of individuals. And then it's an interesting piece because by this time, the Times was asking for color works whenever he could provide them. They weren't going to demand it, but they liked the color. And Hirschfeld did a black and white work, and then he overlaid colored lighting gels over it to make a sort of cascading pattern of spotlights in purple, orange, and yellow.
What are what did you call them?
Gels.
Yeah, what are those?
Those are just, you know, to the layman, they would look like transparent pieces of paper.
Right.
Sort of plasticky.
Okay.
That they use in for lighting when they want to make a blue light. They don't usually get a blue bulb. They have a regular bulb and they put the gel over the lighting fixture.
Mm, so this is like a theater thing.
Oh, it was very much a theater thing, but it was also a film thing. You know, it's how they create the ambiance in any show or film. And this piece was great because he had had a history of drawing Academy Award nominees going back to the 50s.
Right.
Primarily, he did this for United Artists. But so he hadn't done one in a while. And so it was great to see Hirschfeld in the 21st century looking back at these things that he had done before and making it very contemporary.
Right. That's neat.
And what's your film drawing?
Well, at first I was going to choose The Groucho from 2000.
Oh, I have another personal connection to that.
Well, what's your connection?
My connection to it is that it's really a painting of Groucho. Was first appeared in the New York Times book review section, but also ended up appearing on the cover of Hirschfeld's Hollywood.
Why did it appear in the New York book review section first?
Because, this is funny, it was used as an illustration for a review of a biography of Groucho Marx that was almost immediately afterwards pulped because it had been accused and was guilty of plagiarism.
Right. Okay. Interesting. So anyway, I was going to do the Groucho Marx. And then I remembered one of my favorite pieces of merchandise in our store, which is Comedians at Lunch. Because that is just such a classic film comedian scene.
Sure.
With W.C. Fields, Charlie Chaplin, Buster Keaton, and of course, Groucho.
A great piece.
Makes a great tote bag, makes a great t-shirt.
Yes, my wife wears a t-shirt all the time.
Yeah, I have a Comedians at Lunch t-shirt. So I just like, now you chose a contemporary piece. I chose a retrospective piece.
Right. Very much his film work in the 21st century. It was this mixture of contemporary films and classic films.
Right. What was this done for? Do we know?
It was drawn for an edition
of a good set print. Okay. Yeah. So this was straight to the wall.
Yeah. Straight to Prince.
Gotcha. Well, that's what I chose. I just love that piece. It's fun.
Yeah. But I mean, he did do these other great film work. That was a through line through his work from the very beginning in 1920 all the way up until the end. So then let us go to, well, we're going to keep theater for last. How about we do TV next?
Oh, we've got some good TV. I've got two TV ones that are good.
Oh, I know you have TV. So let's hear it.
The TV lady's here.
I'm telling you, she is number one in the boob tube.
Yeah. Well, what should I choose first? Should I go alphabetical? I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, the better piece, the better drawing we have, I think one of the heaviest hitters for the 21st century and was on the back wall of the New York Historical Society show, is The Sopranos.
Oh, yeah.
Print. And that is such a exquisite drawing. You don't even have to have seen The Sopranos to appreciate the lines, I think, of
sure.
that drawing.
And he really captures the character.
Yeah. Now, I remember, I'm going to tell this story, and
hold on to your hats, everybody.
I remember David telling me this story. I have a pretty good memory, as David will tell you.
Steel trap in there.
He told me that he got the commission from HBO to do The Sopranos.
Yes.
They wanted a drawing of it. And I was told that George Goodstadt brought season one of The Sopranos to Hirschfeld, and they stayed up all night watching season one. And then he did this drawing. And I remember this. I remember you telling me this because I was like, that's so funny. And at least my interpretation was that's why this drawing is so good, because he did watch the actors and the characters for an entire season. And it shows in the drawing, because so many times, especially in this later work, you know, when he wasn't going to the theater as much because producers didn't want him to come before the show opened or anything like that. You can tell a lot of times when he didn't see the show because the drawings fall flat or they don't quite look like they're moving really. You know, you can kind of tell. And I think that like in the next piece we're going to talk about for TV, which is Friends, you can tell he never watched Friends because he doesn't really, there's just something a little bit wrong about it. Right. But this Sopranos piece, he like nails it. He nails every scene, all five of the guys. And now that's the story I remember David telling me. David claims he does not remember this story, but it's but weird of me to make that up.
It's one of those stories that should be true.
I think it's true. I remember it. I
believe you. I believe you.
Somebody told it to me. I don't know who else it would be.
Well, your husband telling it to you is not this.
Why would he know a Hirschfeld story?
Well, my point exactly.
The other TV piece I picked, of course, is Friends. I have a dog named Chandler, so I would be remiss to not include all the Hirschfeld drawings of Friends, which is, let's see, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 drawings of Friends.
It is amazing how many drawings there are.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Well, he did those TV, the works that we thought were going to be TV guide covers.
There are 6 color pieces, one of each of the Friends, that, like you said, were supposed to be used or rumored to be used for covers of TV guide, ended up going as like a fold out in the TV guide. So like you would fold it out and it was all these 6. Now there were 2 done of Jennifer Aniston.
I think probably he was given a picture with her hair a different way, and he did that. And then they're like, oh, her hair's never that way.
Yeah, and you got to put her in the Rachel, which is the one that was published.
Right.
The one that was unpublished, the other Jennifer Aniston piece, is longer hair.
Right. It's still her.
Oh, it looks
that one. But it is in Rachel.
Yeah, yeah. So those 7. Then we have TV Guide Canada.
Right.
Does Boyfriends and Girlfriends. There's two covers.
Two covers.
Black and white covers. Yeah. The 3 guys. Those are great. And then the 3 girls. Those are fun.
Yeah.
Those look pretty spot on, I feel like. And then, of course, there's the Friends with the producers on the wall, which was made into a limited edition lithograph.
Yeah. No, it is amazing. And I think that is a quintessential early 21st century television show.
Oh, for sure.
So it's not surprising that he would do all this work on it. And I think TV Guide, maybe one of the reasons they didn't run 6 covers is even for TV Guide, that is a lot.
That's a lot. Now, speaking of quintessential 90s shows, Seinfeld had 4 Hirschfeld TV Guide covers. Sure. That was very successful.
Right. And I think if there had been 4 Friends,
possibly.
No problem.
6 is a lot.
I think the TV Guide Canada did the right thing. Gave us the Boyfriends and the Girlfriends.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
Yeah. But it's wonderful because it continues this long line of TV history that Hirschfeld, really, he captured the first half century of television.
Yeah.
And this is just another example of that. Yeah. I couldn't decide on my TV pieces. There is the West Wing, which was never published in the paper or magazine. It was created for the creative team of the West Wing, and prints were made to distribute to the members of the cast and the crew and all that. We have a print. We don't sell any of these prints, but we have a print, and it is a wonderful piece. And if you ever wondered what a Hirschfeld drawing of Aaron Sorkin would look like, yeah, this is the place to go. You should take a look at that. And then we have another TV show, which I think is very important, is Will and Grace. It is not important for the high level of writing, although it was a pretty funny show. I think it's important because it really helps to introduce gay characters into people's homes. And I think that really helped lead to acceptance of, the LGBTQ community, which is hard to say. And today it seems like when it's such a difficult world in some places. But I think that I've always said that Will and Grace played a role in marriage equality because it allowed people to see gay men as something that not threatening, actually right. kind of fun, the people you'd like to hang out with. And all of a sudden, they weren't scary anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. Will and Grace is very important.
And what's interesting about it is, and I'm not sure why this happened, although I think it happened because of the creative team, but there are three different drawings of Will right. and Grace. And they're all slightly different. And they're all
but at the same time, slightly similar.
Yes.
They're all kind of variations on the same theme.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so maybe that's they each wanted an original drawing. Mm. And of course, Hirschfeld didn't want to copy himself. So this was a way of him finding different ways of doing it. And why that was one of those was never made into a print, I don't know, because mm-hmm. I think that would have been a very popular print. And he, of course, his last TV Guide cover was in the 21st century. Do you know what it was?
The last TV Guide cover is...
She has all of them, folks.
Oh, I think it's Allie McBeal.
No.
What?
I would like to cue the Jeopardy music.
Oh, no. Oh, it's not the American flag.
It is the
American flag. It is the American flag. That was my first guess. And I was like, oh, no, but he's talking about TV, so it must be a TV drawing. It is the American flag.
It is the American flag.
Mm, and that's September 2002? Or 2000? Yeah. Or
September 2001. Wasn't it right after 9/11?
I don't know. I know you hate this piece, so.
I don't hate
December.
It. December 2001.
December 2001.
Yeah. I don't hate the piece. I think it's a fine piece if you want a Hirschfeld painting of a flag.
Yeah.
And it was right for the moment.
Yeah.
It just, you know, when you look at his other TV Guide covers, it's no Milton Berle.
Oh, no.
It's no Lassie. It's no Edward R. Murrow.
It's no What's My Line, but what is? Well, American flag. I'd like to say that was my first guess, but since we were talking about TV, I thought it was a trick question, and that's why I guessed Allie McBeal.
It was a trick question.
So I was misled. I was misled.
Folks, you were all here the whole time. She was misled. That's on her. Okay, I think we may have the same piece for dance. 21st century dance. What best epitomizes 21st century dance by Hirschfeld?
Well, I don't think we do because I know what you chose. And so I decided to choose Riverdance because I remember seeing Riverdance commercials as a 10-year-old, you know, watching my mom watching Riverdance commercials. But I know not it's an okay piece, but Riverdance was a moment, was it not?
Yes.
I mean, it had its moment.
Oh, definitely.
And I remember it very vividly on the
For
TV.
For years, we could not escape Riverdance. Really? Now that is actually a piece that's in American theater as seen by Hirschfeld.
That's true. That's true.
Because it did come to Broadway eventually.
Oh, okay. But the piece you chose is not in American theater seen by Hirschfeld part two.
Yes. Well, for good reason, it doesn't have any, it's only tangentially connected to the
right,
theater.
Right, right.
And you have to make choices. Mine is Jacob's Pillow.
Yes.
Jacob's Pillow, one of the great dance venues, organizations, I mean, certainly of the 20th century and the 21st century, but a really special place. If you love dance, if you haven't been to Jacob's Pillow, you are denying yourself.
Yeah.
And they honored Hirschfeld. And in response, he did a wonderful drawing of the founder of Jacob's Pillow, Ted Shawn, in a classic pose of him bending like a tree. And it's Ted Shawn and these trees bending in the wind. And it's, you know, it has all those great lyrical qualities.
It's a beautiful piece. Yeah. Really
poetic.
Beautiful piece.
I mean, in some ways it really echoes what Ted Shawn and Jacob's Pillow are all about. Mm-hmm. You know, it's this love of beauty, but also it's modern. This isn't a dancer in a tutu.
Right.
You know, classical ballet, although that plays its own role at Jacob's Pillow. But it is a wonderful summation of what Jacob's Pillow is about.
Yeah.
Really love that piece. And there's a, And it was later published as a hand signed limited edition print. Really one of my favorites.
Well, let's talk about music next. I think that's our last category before theater.
Oh, yeah.
What did you choose? You're going first. What did you choose for music? Oh,
well, this is going to be quite unusual. Okay. I think most people who would know me would not think of this, but it is a drawing that I played a role in creating and have a story to. So that's why I'm going to talk about it.
I'm excited because I've already forgotten what you chose. I'm like, what is this piece?
Does not make me feel good that our archives manager has forgotten something I told her just minutes ago.
I'm excited. Tell us.
The Conductors of the Philadelphia Orchestra.
Oh, how could I forget? Yes.
This was something that came about because the Philadelphia Orchestra had moved into the Kimmel Center in Philadelphia. And there was a wonderful shop there called Intermission that was run by a great lady, Terry Merrick. And we knew each other. And one day she called me up and she said, do you think Hirschfeld would ever want to draw the conductors of the Philadelphia Orchestra? And I said, of course he would love to draw it. She had this idea that they could do a drawing and maybe auction off the drawing to raise money for the Philadelphia Orchestra. And so I said, we'll gather photos together. There were, had been five conductors of the Philadelphia Orchestra at that time. This is 2002. This is a very, very late work for Hirschfeld. And he did a drawing. It was wonderful. And I sent it down to Terry. And a couple of days later, I get a phone call and said, would you mind coming down to the orchestra? I think they need a laying on of the hands. That's all she said to me. And of course, I said yes. But I really didn't know what I was going there for. And Terry and I go into this boardroom of the Philadelphia Orchestra. We're on one side of the table. On the other side is the head of the orchestra. And on each side, he's got like three lieutenants. And I thought, boy, it's like bringing a knife to a gunfight. I'm a little worried. And so why are we here? I mean, that was my question. Why are we here? And these lieutenants start talking about the drawing. And they start saying, Riccardo Muti doesn't have hair like that. Or Wolfgang Sawalovich is not as jolly as that. I mean, they started going through picking out all these little things. And I'm listening to it. And I said, okay. I said, if you wanted a photograph, you should have gotten a photograph. You hired, you commissioned an artist to interpret these things. I said, Beethoven's Fifth. We can all agree what the notes are. You know, and they agreed that they knew what the notes of Beethoven's Fifth is. I said, if we gave the Beethoven's Fifth score to each of these five conductors, would it sound the same? And of course, they got very indignant and said no and talked about interpretation and all this thing and personality and whatnot.
A sick burn David gave them.
And I said, that's exactly what we're talking about. You know, you asked an artist to interpret these individuals and, you know, you didn't. If you wanted photographic representation, you went to the wrong artist.
Yeah, and maybe don't go to a caricaturist. Right. If you wanted a, eyes, nose, and throat, whatever.
The eye, ear, nose, and throat portrait. Okay. and the head of the orchestra had, was quiet. Now, at this point, you know, when Terry got the drawing, she loved it so much. The first thing she asked was, could we do an edition of prints? And I said, of course we could do it. And I got all the information for her and how we'd get it done. And we actually used one of Andy Warhol's former printers to make that a Durham Press, really great guy there, Pierre. And so they were going to do an edition of 100 prints. And so I then told the assembled Philadelphia Orchestra people about my mother and father, who live 2 hours away from Harrisburg. I mean, 2 hours away from Philadelphia in Harrisburg. And they would come down once a month. They would get a hotel room across the street from where the orchestra played. And they would come, and they had a subscription. And at that point, I'd been working with Hirschfeld for 13 years. And my parents were very proud of that and loved it and had met Hirschfeld. They had never expressed any interest in owning a Hirschfeld drawing, print, or anything else. But when I told my father that Hirschfeld might be drawing the conductors, he just said, oh, that's a piece I'd like. Mm. And I said this to them. I said, that's what we're talking about here. And finally, the head of the Philadelphia Orchestra speaks up and he turns to the lieutenant and says, have you shown this image to anybody outside of the organization? And they were like, oh, no, we haven't done that. You know, they were just so concerned. And then he turned to me. And this was like a Thursday or something. And he says, can we get back to you on this? I said, sure. You know, the drawing's done. You know,
right.
It's been paid for. If you don't want to do anything else with it, that's perfectly within your rights. But sure, you know, we wanted to get the print done. They had a fundraising idea. So on Monday morning, I got a call from the Philadelphia Orchestra. A great fellow, Ed Cameron. And we start talking and he says, David, so we've gone over everything and we have one question for you. And I said, what is that? He said, I know we talked about an addition of 100, but do you think we could make it an addition of 200 prints? Yeah. Perfect. I said, of course we could, Ed.
Yeah.
And indeed, that's what happened. And it became a huge fundraiser for the Philadelphia Orchestra. It was great. And it is literally a great piece. I have a personal connection to it.
It's another great piece from the 21st century.
Yeah. No, so that's my music piece in the 21st century. There are others. He drew Jerry Garcia, for instance, a great piece called Touch of Grey that was published as a print. That's my great music piece.
Well, my great music piece should come as no surprise. Of course, I picked Reba.
Reba.
Now, this is from when she was on Broadway. So actually, technically, it's a theater piece.
Technically,
it's a theater piece. It's listed in our database as a theater piece. So whoops. But this is when she was appearing. This is when she
can't even follow simple instructions.
Well, it'll be a nice transition into our final theater.
There you have it. Good for you.
But this is when Reba was in Annie Get Your Gun on Broadway in 2001. And I do love Reba, of course, but I think this is a really fun piece, even if you don't know who Reba is or anything.
Right.
I mean, I think everybody knows who Reba is, but you get my point. It's a nice drawing.
I'll call my son.
Yeah. He does not know who Reba is. It's her with her flaming red hair. And in the background, she's got great cityscape of New York, which actually is very reminiscent of the 42nd Street drawing, which is also from the 21st century.
No, of
course. And then that Barbara Streisand piece, I forget what that one's called, that Barbara Streisand print, Back to Broadway. And we use, for whatever reason, sometimes there's moments in my life where David says, Catherine, we need
New York skyline.
Exactly, New York skyline. And this is one of the pieces I'll go to because, you know, you think this would be everywhere, but it's not. It's only in a few pieces. The cityscape of New York. We want it for a wallpaper in an exhibition or something like that.
Right.
And this Reba piece is often one that we'll go back to because it has a lot of, just that the city feel to it. I love this piece and I have this hanging in my dining room.
And who is it signed by?
It is signed by Reba herself. This was part of the Broadway Cares prints. I don't know when our next auction is, but we'll let you know.
Well, there'll be an auction
Reba
at the
could
end
be
of
yours.
July.
In July?
The last 2 weeks of July 2023.
There you go.
There'll be another auction of these special prints that we created with Broadway Cares and that are signed by the performers.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, there'll be ones that people have never seen before.
Yeah, good. I can't promise you if Reba is, because hers are signed Love Reba. You know, most of the other Broadway Cares prints are just, you know, Bruce Springsteen or Michael Crawford. Oh, no, I think Michael Crawford actually says with love.
Yeah.
So Michael Crawford's a bad example. But Reba says Love Reba. So
I
can't promise.
I think Bernadette might say love.
No, she has a really big signature.
She's a big signature.
Yeah, she's a big signature.
She's Bernadette Peters.
She's got to have a big signature. But maybe Reba will be in July. I can't promise anything. But I get to see it every day. I love it very much.
And we do see color in his work. It pops up much more frequently. It's a relatively small data set because, you know, there might be 250 drawings that we're talking about here that he did. But it's surprising a lot more color. And that was because color was becoming easier to reproduce in newspapers and everywhere else at that time.
Well, speaking of color pieces and theater transition, I will say my theater piece was the Oklahoma.
Oklahoma.
How do you spell Oklahoma? Okay. Okay. I love, well, I'm partial to Oklahoma. One of my favorite musicals. Yes. I don't care what anybody says. You can make fun of me.
We do all the time.
Yeah, I don't care. It's a, I just love it. It's one of, I remember my granny taking us to see Oklahoma at the West Virginia State Theater when I was young.
You got to picture this in your mind.
Oh, it's an amphitheater. It's outside.
Oh my God.
And every year they do Hatfields and McCoys or Honey in the Rock. I think they alternate. Honey in the Rock is a West Virginia Cole musical. I've never seen Honey in the Rock. I've seen Hatfields and McCoys. But so anyway, Oklahoma is one of the first ones I remember seeing. And I remember buying the cast album. But it was the cast album and it had Florence Henderson in it. So it must have been from the 60s or 70s.
City Center production.
Oh, okay. Well, that's the Oklahoma recording I had and would listen to. So Oklahoma and... Like, I remember Granny renting us Fiddler on the Roof on VHS. So, like, they're, you know, some of those early musicals I always remember, and, like, they're very special. So, Oklahoma I love, and I love, and there's not a lot for such an important musical, really, arguably, as David would say, the first musical.
One, well, not
see,
first,
arguably. David says Showboat. The rest of the world says Oklahoma. What are
the
we
rest
to
of
say?
The world does not say Oklahoma.
But as you know, the first drawing of Oklahoma is not a great drawing of Oklahoma. He didn't think it was going to be a hit.
He didn't think it was going to get into New York.
Yeah. And then over the years, there is that good one. Was it 1960 or 62?
1969. It's in the new book.
That's a great really nice one. Piece. That's a great one. It has Margaret Hamilton in it.
Right.
That's a nice one. But otherwise, there's not a real like great rousing cast drawing of Oklahoma.
Right.
I feel like this one gets it a little bit. At least you get some color and some fun costumes, and you do get a lot more dancing in this one, which is what I think of when I think of Oklahoma.
Wow.
You know, everybody thinks of the ballet scene.
Right.
So I really like this Oklahoma. Yeah, I really like this Oklahoma piece.
Yeah. No, that is, it is a great piece.
And there's a wonderful photograph. We'll have to find it and link it in the show notes.
Oh, yeah, sure.
There's a wonderful photograph of Hirschfeld at his drawing table working on this Oklahoma drawing. You can see it's plain to see it's this Oklahoma drawing, and it's nice.
And that is a something that those of us at the Al Hirschfeld Foundation always look for when we see a picture of Hirschfeld in his studio.
Oh, yeah. What's the drawing?
We immediately want to know what the drawing is.
What drawings are you working on? And you can usually, very few can you not, you know, do you not know what it is?
We can just see a little piece and we can put the rest of it together. So,
He has a Phil Silvers. There's a Phil Silvers one.
That's a classic. There's one, I think, of Lacage where he's drawing. And, yeah, I mean, and that helps us date the photos, too.
Yes, yep.
Because
we know exactly
if we don't have a date
taken.
On the photo, we can say, hey, we know.
Oh, he's working on the Oklahoma drawing. It's 2002 or whatever. What did you pick for theater, David?
As usual, I have many choices. I'm trying to narrow it down. You know, I love 42nd Street for the reasons that we talked about. There's a funny Hirschfeld story there. That's one of the last shows he saw... he went to a preview and made sketches on a small pad. And he took a taxi to the theater, which was unusual for him. And coming home, he took a taxi and he left his sketch pad in the taxi, never to be seen again.
Oh, no.
And he still created a great drawing. Ugh. I mean, it's still a wonderful drawing. Yeah. It's really one of my favorite pieces from
Allentown.
Yeah.
I've never seen 42nd Street, but working at the Al Hirschfeld Foundation, the only thing I know about 42nd Street is there's a line where the guy goes, Allentown, because there are two types of people in the world. When I tell them I'm from Allentown, Pennsylvania, they either say Billy Joel.
Yes.
Or they go, Allentown, and that's how I know if they're a theater person or not.
Folks, so you know, when you meet her, ask her.
If it's a theater person, they don't know who Billy Joel is, but they know the 42nd Street line.
Really great. I actually saw the production, and it was wonderful. And then there are there's a wonderful drawing of David Mamet and Ricky Jay. Mm. And we can argue about Mamet's place in the American theater. I think he's written some great plays, but I've lost my taste for him. Ricky Jay was a phenomenon. If you had ever seen him perform, and I had the chance several times to see him perform, he was incredible. He was also one of these people you could listen to for hours because he had a wonderful take on life and people and of course, magic. He was a great magician.
And like real magic, like a...
Yeah.
Like Penn
but not Tower. Like David Copperfield magic. This was a guy who was into actually debunking, you know, magicians who claimed they could do things that they couldn't. And he was a student of the history of magic. Mm. And he was a great sleight of hand artist. Mm. And Ricky Jay with a deck of cards was like, if he went on a plane, they should take the cards from him. Because I one time saw him do a show where it was a regular deck of cards. And he threw them at a watermelon and they pierced the skin of a watermelon. He had that kind of control. I mean, it was really, really incredible.
Do you think it was real?
I was literally sitting right there.
I'm too much of a skeptic for that. Yeah, I don't know.
Look it up. It might be on YouTube. Really incredible. Just an incredible guy. When he started talking about the things that he was interested in, he wrote a great book called Learned Pigs and Fireproof Women. And he goes into these stories because he loved, like Hirschfeld, he loved the characters. Mm. You know, these strange people that make up so many things in our life. Well, one of the reasons I love this drawing, it's a great drawing of both of them. And when it ran in the New York Times, it ran with the edited transcript of a conversation that Hirschfeld had with David Mamet and Ricky Jay. Right. They were doing a show called On the Stem, which sort of talked about the sort of seedy history of Broadway, you know, a world that they were very interested in. And, you know, they go up to Hirschfeld to sort of sit for their portrait. And of course, they're very, you know, for them, Hirschfeld is a living link to this world that they're talking about. And they start talking about it and they get very excited. And then Hirschfeld's wife, Louise, says, oh, you should talk to them about Houdini. And I think she meant that when Al was about 14 years old, he cut school for a week to go to the palace to see every show that Houdini did. He was fascinated with Houdini. And indeed, classic Hirschfeld story, very typical. Houdini eventually invites him backstage and shows him how to do some tricks. I mean, that's Hirschfeld's life in a nutshell. When Hirschfeld first told me about this, I was very interested because I know also on that bill was Buster Keaton and his parents in a vaudeville act, and to get a firsthand account of somebody who'd seen it, and he had no recollection of it at all.
Oh, jeez.
You know, he only had eyes for Houdini. But he doesn't tell that story. He tells the story of being at Houdini's final show, and which is a whole thing I'm not going to get into here, but there's a whole legend with it and all that. And of course, Mamet was interested. Ricky Jay was literally hanging on the words. And they talk about it. And of course, he was talking to people who knew what he was talking about. No explanations were needed. The people that they talked about, Hirschfeld knew instantly. And the article ends with Ricky Jay, you know, getting into a cab, and he just can't believe that he is, you know, that Hirschfeld was this living bridge to this world that he was so fascinated with, and that he was still drawing, that he was still part of it. I mean, at this point, I mean, Hirschfeld was 99 years old, and he had been drawing the theater and been part of the theater world since he was 23, you know, and it was amazing. Ricky Jay eventually bought the drawing.
Wow.
You know, great thing.
That's a nice drawing as well.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And then the last group of theater drawings, these are all unusual in the sense that they're not, 42nd Street is a sort of typical cast drawing. But these last ones I want to talk about are the special theatrical event Tony nominees in 2001. Barbara Cook and Mosley Sondheim These are all color works.
Yeah.
But they're color works on Hirschfeld's terms. They're really line drawings with color. John Leguizamo, B. Arthur, Elaine Stritch. I mean, it's a great group of pieces. We have them in the new book. I guess the book shows all my predilections, you know, all the ones that I like got into the book. If you liked them, you can put together your own book.
Did I get any in the book?
Of course you got things in the book.
I know, but one
thing River Dance is in the book.
Yeah, but I didn't like argue for River Dance.
I don't. If you argue for something, it's in the book.
I don't remember.
I didn't keep anything you wanted
out. I didn't keep track. I didn't keep track of what I wanted.
I really don't look at it as mine and yours.
No, I don't either. But no, I don't either. I think that's why I don't remember.
Yeah. No, a really great experience in the 21st century that we had with Hirschfeld's work.
That's true.
And then probably the last thing I wanted to talk about was his last self-portrait.
Probably my favorite self-portrait.
Well, it's one of my favorites. I have to, I'm going to.
You're a fog man.
Oh, I love the fog portrait that's on the cover of Hirschfeld's Century.
What's David's
that favorite? Is, I think, as close to an accurate self-portrait of Hirschfeld as I knew him, as there is. I also have a great love for the inkwell self-portrait.
Oh, yes.
I found that in the studio on a piece of paper.
And it's small.
It's small.
It's very small. It's framed. We have it framed, right. And it's a very small frame.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm always shocked. It's such an important piece now. You know, it's the marquee, but, you know.
It's the marquee of
to
the
him,
Al
it was
Hirschfeld
just
Theater.
Another silly self-portrait he did.
Yeah. I mean, they weren't silly self-portraits. They were how Hirschfeld saw himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it may have been the cover, his original cover idea for Hirschfeld by Hirschfeld.
Yeah.
His 1980 book. But he didn't remember what he had drawn it for.
Right.
And
no, that's what I mean. It was just another, it was a throwaway thing. It was just
a little bit of wit and fun that he had. But that has really taken on this sort of other life. It, in many ways, it is how most people see Al Hirschfeld now.
Oh, absolutely.
That's a fun thing for me.
Yeah.
And but the last self-portrait, I really like because it shows him doing what he loved doing and the way, you know, and you see him in his studio.
That's why I like it.
And if you, having been in that studio hundreds of times, he captured his studio. Mm. It is, if you want to know what Hirschfeld's studio was like, you can see that self-portrait, which I hate to be a broken record, is also in the new book. Strange how that happened. And of course the inkwell self-portrait's on the cover. So I definitely check both my bases.
There you go.
But it is a great self-portrait and one that everybody should take a look at. So that is Hirschfeld in the 21st century.
A lot. And some really great pieces.
Wait, I have a question for you.
Oh,
this is,
yes.
What Hirschfeld was in a recent best-selling book? Nonfiction.
Mary Rogers.
Mary Rogers is correct. Shy, the very dishy memoir of Mary Rogers that she wrote with Jesse Green. The frontispiece is a Hirschfeld portrait of Mary Rogers that was drawn in 2001.
Oh, look at that.
And it's a great piece. And I think he would be tickled that his drawing is being seen with this book, a book that really covers a lot of people that he knew very well and probably knew a lot of these stories before they were ever published.
Yeah.
Hirschfeld was a great keeper of secrets. So we're going to leave everybody else here in the 21st century. And
we are always Hirschfeld in the 21st century.
Yes.
Here.
Well, and that's kind of it now. I mean,
yeah.
the Hirschfeld Theater is Hirschfeld in the 21st century. He's on Broadway every night, every day. He's there. It's like the eternal flame on Broadway. And then, of course, the foundation, which came into being in the 21st century under his direction, now is the closest thing we have to Hirschfeld in the sense that we share all of his work as much as possible.
That is our goal.
So Hirschfeld in the 20th century is alive and well. You know, he's got a hit show at the Museum of Broadway where it's just been extended for its second and final time. It's going to run till Hirschfeld's 120th birthday on June 21st. So if you haven't had a chance to see that yet, you have a couple more weeks. We've got a couple of special events, talks that we're giving, and I hope you can come and make it to see that, to see the exhibition. Even if you miss it, there are still 20 Hirschfeld reproductions scattered throughout the museum.
Yes.
And you should take it in as soon as possible.
Yeah. Well, that was fun. Because I'm definitely much more of an expert on 21st century things.
Yes.
Although working here has helped, I'm pretty good at 20th century. But it was fun to, you know, talk about things that people are still talking about a lot, like The Sopranos or Friends, right, or whatever it is. So, all right, we'll wrap it up here.
If you have questions, comments,
concerns,
ideas for podcasts.
Oh, we would love podcast ideas.
We have a lot of them, but we're always looking for new ones.
We want to know what you guys want to hear about.
Exactly.
Yeah, for sure.
Write to info@alhirschfeldfoundation.org.
Great.
You can visit us on social media.
Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and we have a YouTube as well.
Yes. If you haven't checked out our recent YouTube videos by Media Director Doug Koons, you are denying yourself.
Yeah.
The most recent one on Swingin' the Dream.
Oh, that one was great.
Phenomenal.
That one was great.
It is phenomenal. And even if you think I know that story, I guarantee you, you're going to learn things you've never learned before and see things you have never seen
before.
Yeah,
that's the great thing about the video is it's like the podcast, but you don't have to click the links.
Right.
It just shows it to you. If you're lazy, go to the YouTube channel. But you don't get all the you don't get all the good stories you get on the podcast. It's a limited number.
It's a story at a time.
Yes. Don't forget to visit our shop, alhirschfeldfoundationshop.org, Catherine's favorite website on the internet. I love going shopping.
Check out
all our prints, as well as all our merchandise like mugs, tote bags, sweatshirts,
t-shirts.
Oh yeah.
Exhibition posters.
Those are very popular.
Yeah,
the exhibition, the Nina one is the most popular exhibition poster. I have the dog show, of course, hanging in the dog room.
And it's not because she's, no.
But the exhibition posters are always very popular. So check those out. Check out our shop.
And thank you for listening. We will see you when we do.
Goodbye.